Earth and Sky.
For the first time, we can see a surface, a catalyst surface, and actually tell where the molecules are reacting. For the first time, we can go into the workings of a, let's say, of a cell, a human body cell, and see where the molecules are moving across, how the membranes in those cells behave, and that has a tremendous impact.
You're listening to Shell scientist Sergio Capusta, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Dr. Capusta spoke with us about the enormous potential of nanotechnology, the science of the very small, in helping meet the world's energy demand. Up next with more is Earth Sky's Jorge Salazar with Sergio Capusta.
Dr. Capusta, welcome to Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science.
Glad to be with you.
We're here to talk about a convergence of two powerful forces in our world. First, the world's increasing energy demand to create the lifestyles that we want. And second, a technology thought by many to have huge potential, nanotechnology. Tell us more about that. What is nanotechnology?
Yes. Thank you, Jorge. Glad to answer your question. The way that we see it is nanotechnology is the engineering and manipulation of matter at the nanoscale. So nano is very, very small. We have been using nanotechnology by one means or another for a long time, but in recent years, I would say in the past 10, 20 years, we have gained the experience and the know-how of how to manipulate and how to engineering material in the way that we want by moving molecules at that scale. And one of the questions is, what is nano? And why is it called nano? And it comes all from a unit of measurement called the nanometer. To give you an example of what a nanometer is if you take a human hair and divide it by 100,000 in size, that the width of a human hair, that would be a nanometer.
And why are scientists starting to work at this scale, at the scale of nanometers?
Well, one reason that scientists want to work at this scale is because a lot of the things which are important to life and a lot of the things which are important to energy, such as combustion or conversion to oil, to useful products, or even the function of your body, the cells, how they work, they all occur at a very small scale. They all occur at the nano scale. And in the past, we just couldn't see. We didn't have the tools to actually reach into that tiny world and see the processes as they occur. The last 10, 20 years have seen a lot of advances in many areas of technology which converged to give us an insight about what's going on at that nanoscale. We think that nanotechnology has the potential to help us produce more energy. It can help us produce energy from more difficult sources. And third, it can also help us protect the environment, remove CO2, clean the water. That's the promise of nanotechnology.
Could you give us some examples here? How are innovations in nanotechnology already working to help affect the world's diminishing supply of easy oil?
Yes. We have been using nanotechnology by other names for a long time. For example, catalysis, or most catalysts, are nanomaterials, and we have been using those for at least 100 years. The way in which we envision that nanotechnology can help us get more energy is, for example, one of the main limitations that we have in oil and also in gas production is that we cannot really look at the reservoirs. The reservoirs are the locations where the oil and the gas exist in the crust of the Earth. And these locations are very often several thousand meters below the surface. We have very crude instrumentation that can actually reach to those depths. Nanotechnology offers us the possibility of actually what we call illuminate the reservoir, that is to tell us where in a vast reservoir of rocks we find oil, water, and gas. That is one way in which nanotechnology can help us.
Looking ahead into the future, what are some applications for nanotechnology that you think we might see?
Well, I think that the future looks more that into some things that are called self-assembly systems. An example could be that the nanoparticles react to their own environment. So they carry information with them that will allow the particles to react in certain ways depending on what they see, without need for intervention, for example. And that will also, that the particles will be able to communicate this information back to us. Other things that are being studied now are, for example, self-repair materials. That is, materials that if damaged, they're broken, they can repair themselves. Same as, for example, a human skin. When it's cut, it can repair itself. There are some universities now which are looking into this, and it seems that they may be reality in, say, 10, 15 years or 20 years from now.
And in addition to fossil fuel technology, Shell has major investments in research and development for renewable energy sources. How could nanotechnology help in renewable energy?
Yes, Shell has indeed made a strong commitment to renewables. Part of that, as you probably know, we are leaders in hydrogen fueling. And I think that, for example, for storing hydrogen, nanoparticles have an enormous potential. Some of that potential is, in fact, being realized even today. That is for keeping hydrogen in a vehicle, for example, without the risk of having very high pressures. A lot of hydrogen, but at lower pressures, which reduce the risk in case of rupture or in case of an accident. Also, the nanocatalysts, or catalysts which are based on nanotechnology, will make the conversion of hydrogen into energy, that is in a fuel cell, much more efficient than it is today. There are many studies ongoing now, many projects to actually do this, and I'm very confident that within a few years we will see some sort of a strong advance in hydrogen fuel cells driven by nanotechnology.
That was Shell scientist Sergio Capusta on how nanotechnology can help meet the demand for energy in this century. Our thanks today to Shell, encouraging dialogue on the energy challenge. To subscribe to this and other free science podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Deborah Bird, and you're listening to Earth Skies, clear voices for science.
We're at earthsky.org.